Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It is hour two, brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We are on iHeartRadio. We are on Fox Sports Radio. We are on FS1. One of my favorite people in the world, Dave Wannstedt. No Dolphin coach has lasted 4 years since he was there. Got him to the playoffs. Dave Wannstedt joining us in about 5 minutes. And Joy Taylor is joining me this morning. Joy, how are you? I think we lost. I cannot hear Joy for some reason on her Skype. So we'll get that figured out as soon as we possibly can. So here is a story this morning. And we all know this. NBA has always been very much transactional. We talk about this all the time. NFL never was. It was about regular season. Playoffs were great, and then occasionally you'd have trades. Now the NFL is a very transactional league, especially quarterbacks. So here's the latest. Mike Lombardi, longtime Bill Belichick assistant, Cleveland Browns GM, was on the Pat McAfee show and basically said, he came out and he said, the Denver Broncos were very close to making a trade and moving off of Drew Lock, which they need to. He's the only quarterback in the league. Since he's entered the league, he's the only quarterback completing less than 60% of his throws. Little too cool for me. Little too casual. Too many interceptions. He ain't it, as the kids say. It just we got 18 starts here. He's got 59% completion percentage, 79 passer rating, 23 TDs, 18 picks. He's not it. Too casual. Just doesn't play with enough urgency. He played AAU basketball. He's a little too cool for the room. And that's cool guys don't win in this league. Baker tries to be too cool. Johnny Manziel tried to be too cool. Cam Newton sometimes was more worried about being cool. Don't be cool. Be urgent. Be kind of a dork. Like, every play matters. Drew Lock doesn't play with that kind of urgency. Lets too many balls go that you just wouldn't throw in high school. Just not good enough throw. So he's done. But it's now official. Denver is looking for a quarterback now. So I'm not going to count the Niners, Atlanta, or Minnesota. All of them could draft a quarterback. I'm not going to count them. Here's the current teams that need a quarterback, and we all know. Jets, Jags, Carolina, Denver, New England, Washington, Chicago, Indy, and New Orleans. That's nine. It's almost a third of the league. What's really happening in the NFL right now, it used to be when you were a quarterback. You came into the league and you got one shot. Drew Brees was the exception. If you got hurt or you didn't work, it was over. It's all done now. You do get a second chance now. Carson Wentz is going to get one. Sam Darnold's going to get one. I think Jameis Winston's going to get one. Cam Newton got one. Marcus Mariota, I think, is going to get one. Ryan Tannehill got one. So why is that happening now? Why do quarterbacks get a second chance? There's two things. A, it's just a more transactional league. There's more trades made all the time. And quarterbacks, like everybody else, can be moved. Number two is bigger business than ever, more money than ever. GMs and coaches are just less patient. So they're just going to move off you. It doesn't mean the league is moving off you. It means your team is more willing quickly to move off you. And with this influx of terrific young college quarterbacks ready to play, teams roll the dice more. They're willing to let Joe Burrow walked in with a bad O-line and a bad team. And we knew by the second week at halftime, dude can play. Drew Lock thought he was interesting for about 5 or 6 or 7 starts. Now we got 18. Dude can't play in this league. He won't get a second shot. So, there's an old rule in the NFL. I've said this multiple times. You can't have the fourth best quarterback in a division. If you do, you got to move off it. So in the AFC West, Mahomes is number one. Herbert's number two. Derek Carr's number three. Drew Lock is not four. Marcus Mariota, the backup to Carr, is better than Drew Lock. So Drew Lock is the fifth best quarterback in his division. It doesn't work that way. You got to move off him. It's nothing against the kid, but 18 starts. He's too casual, too many picks. He's just not buttoned up. Got to move off him. Want to bring in one of my friends, former Bear coach, Dolphin coach, Pitt coach, Cowboys, Super Bowls, national championships with Jimmy Johnson. Dave Wannstedt, Fox Sports NFL analyst, now is joining us live. So, you know, it's interesting with Carson Wentz. I think we both admit, Dave, he's really talented. No, nobody would dispute that. He's really, really talented. He's also expensive. But if you start looking at the team, Chicago's interested, the Colts are interested. Give me your thought, if you had some personnel control in this league, where do you stand today on Carson Wentz?
I think he's a talented guy. I think he needs to be surrounded by a lot of strong leadership. And that's a problem that I see having in Chicago, to be quite honest with you. Their defense got leaders, but offensively right now, they're obviously a little bit upside down. And, and Bruce Arians, I know, is coming on your show later on, Carson. And I will tell you this, because I remember hearing Bruce talk about this, and it really made sense. He was talking about some of these quarterbacks have never been under center before. And then he elaborated more and made this point. And here's what I'm talking about, Carson Wentz. A quarterback, one guy talks in the huddle, the quarterback. The quarterback got to be able to get everybody's attention. When New England had the big comeback and they beat when they came back and beat Atlanta in Houston that Super Bowl.
Did we lose him? There we go. We'll try to get Dave Wannstedt again. He is sitting in Naples, Florida right now, and I'm looking up at the video screen, and he looks to be a little fuzzy. He was right in the middle. You know, Dave's one of the great storytellers, and he was right in the middle of a really good story. So I don't want to disrupt his story. We do have Bruce Arians on next hour. What is interesting with Carson Wentz, I'm not sure if Dave was going to elaborate, is that he comes from a small college and he goes to Philadelphia and he had a lot of really good leaders around him. Well, Frank Reich has now taken a head coaching job. So let's go back to Dave Wannstedt. Finish your story on Carson Wentz and Bruce Arians.
Well, you know, the whole story that Bruce was talking about was quarterbacks in his mind are the only ones speaking in the huddle. And he was talking about the young kids coming out of college nowadays that, oh, they take the snap and they get the play from the sideline and they go up the line of scrimmage and yell some numbers out and run the play. Well, a problem with Carson Wentz that I'm told, talking to a lot of people, is his leadership ability. That he lost the team. He lost the offense. And right now, you bring a quarterback like Carson Wentz in, and what Tom Brady did in that Super Bowl, Deion Lewis told us in our postgame show, Tom Brady came into that huddle and told everybody to do their damn jobs, and he said, I'll tell you what, you can count on me doing my job. Dan Marino's last year at Miami, we were down there, Dan came into the huddle, and he was in at the end, and he came in, they were down one time, and he looked around the huddle, and he said, who wants to score a touchdown? I mean, there's a presence and a communication with the quarterback in a huddle when the game's on the line that's invaluable. And I'm not hearing that about Carson Wentz. And that, to me, was a little bit of the problem, you know, for whatever reason, with the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think that's an issue, and I think he's got to go to the right place. And let me tell you about Chicago right now. Chicago is a little bit unraveled as a football team. Everybody can take their shots. But Chicago's a tough-minded, proud city. And when anybody comes out and insinuates that they don't want to be part of it, I'll tell you what, then don't be part of it. Because Chicago doesn't mind winning a football game 10-7. Okay? They do not need 35 points to be happy in Chicago. I lived it. Okay? I lived it. So don't, you know, you want to be part of it? Come on, roll your sleeves up and get ready for it. But if you don't, then go somewhere else. And I think that's the approach. I talked to someone this morning. That's pretty much where the Bears are at. We made our offer. And the Bears are exploring other quarterbacks. They're talking around the league without getting into a lot of specifics. And they're ready to go another direction other than Carson Wentz, as much as they'd like to have him.
That's really good.
They've about had it.
Yeah, no, this is why we bring you on. You got all connections throughout the league. So here's interesting with Jimmy Garoppolo. I looked at this morning. There's another story San Francisco's done with him. Dave, we know that when he plays, he wins. We know that. We've seen it. Even Kyle Shanahan struggles without him. Here's an issue, though, and I want you to go back to your career. The three times he's been hurt in week two, and week three. That tells me, Dave, he's brittle. He comes out of a camp. By early September, he's banged up. It's not like he gave me 15 great weeks. You know, Mahomes had this where he got hurt at the end of the year and all those reps and all those snaps and all those hits. I understand players at the end of the year getting banged up. What would you do with Garoppolo? Clearly he's successful. Dave, I don't think he can stay healthy. His body's telling me it can't.
Yeah, some quarterbacks just and running backs. I think this is it, every position. I mean, Emmitt Smith, you know, and I played with Tony Dorsett, and Emmitt Smith, I was there coaching him at Dallas. Some running backs and quarterbacks in every position just find a way not to get hit in the fashion that they're going to kind of stay healthy. And he doesn't protect himself very well, in my opinion. You can't blame it on the offensive style because they run a quarterback-friendly offense. Okay, and so he's not dropping back and throwing it 50 times a game. We all know that. So to me, we can't do anything more to protect you. We got the offensive line. We got play action passes. We're moving you. We're doing everything we can. That is a concern. Yeah. No question about it. I would be concerned about it. And I don't think San Francisco is going to do anything until they can get somebody better. If they can get somebody better, they know they can win with Garoppolo. They know they can win with them. And that's a lot. A lot of these teams cannot say that.
Yeah. So J.J. Watt's on the market. Listen,
I love it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think he fits Green Bay, and I've said this before. Green Bay, it's almost symbolic. Everybody in the NFC is aggressive, and Green Bay sits back there. They win a bunch of games, and they have kind of a style, and they don't go big after free agents. And sometimes – it doesn't mean you're changing your culture, Dave. Sometimes you got to go for it. It sends a message in the room that we're going to be aggressive. I think it elevates players' confidence. I think Green Bay needs to go after J.J. Watt, but he's not cheap. He's been around a while. He's had injuries. Your thoughts on him as a player and what would he mean? Where would it fit for you?
Well, I love J.J. Watt. And let me say this. My first reaction is, not Green Bay. As much as every team could use him, their two tackles, when they were playing their best defense of the year at the end of the year, it was Clark and it was Gary were the two guys, in my opinion, that were playing at a high level. They're two inside guys and they were making a difference. So I would not even consider Green Bay if I was with the Packers. I like my young guys. The team I would look, you look at the bottom five teams on defense, and he's a 4-3 guy. I would love to see, being a Pittsburgh guy, I would love to see the love story of him going back and playing with his two brothers in Pittsburgh. But Pittsburgh's a 3-4 team, and he's got to be on the edge of the guard or on the edge of the tackle outside rushing off the edge. That's what the guy does best. He's not in there going to get double teamed and use him up as a blocker. So I think you got to look at a 4-3 team. And the team that I looked at, I was looking at that this morning. And the Tennessee Titans are a 4-3 team. They were a bottom five defense. They have a chance to make a run at the big dance. If I was J.J. Watt, I would want to go to a successful team, a team that's going to play a 4-3, and give me a chance. Hey, I don't have many years left. Give me a chance to do what I can do best. Go to one of those 4-3 teams that are going to win. I say Tennessee Titans.
Listen, if you were coaching Houston, and Deshaun Watson would be happier than he is now, but if a quarterback's unhappy and he's a very verbal person, it just seeps through the entire organization. Could I make the argument, he just came off his best year, you got 4 to 5 teams willing to have a bidding war for him, you've got a high draft pick, and there's 4 or 5 good college quarterbacks, that maybe now he's been injured before, he wasn't injured this year. Could I make the argument, Dave, listen, you don't want to trade him. There's a bidding war for a healthy star quarterback. You may get more picks than you've ever imagined off him right now.
Yeah, I mean, in the state of their team right now, I don't think that'll happen, but I would not be shocked. I mean, there was talk earlier about this week about Dallas, about Jerry signing Dak and then trading him, you know, to Houston for a bunch of picks. And Deshaun Watson going there. You know, if I'm Deshaun Watson, you know, San Francisco, I know they would love to have him because they're the style of offense. You know, when he plays his best, early in the year, he was just going to be a pat. And then when he uses his legs and he's not afraid to run some, boy, the guy is better and as good as anybody in the league. I would, if I'm him, I'm looking at one of those type of teams where I can obviously excel at my skills. But, boy, Houston's a tough one. I mean, the head coach is not even picking the assistant coaches here. I'm still trying to figure this one out. The general manager, I mean, you go into the first staff meeting and you're introducing everybody around the room. I was talking to a guy the other day. I said, what happens when somebody, you know, little things like this, Colin, that people don't understand. If you're in an NFL practice and somebody jumps off sides, okay, every coach better be reacting the same way. And I've seen it where a guy jumps offside. One coach wants to run everybody in a lap. The other coach wants to do 10 push-ups. The other coach wants to run the play 5 times in a row. You know, these little things. The point that I'm making is Houston right now, it's really – I don't know how they're going to pull this thing together fast enough. Deshaun Watson is in a very difficult situation. Very difficult situation. And I could go on for this for hours. I'm trying to figure it out. I don't have enough time.
Finally, you know, there's always been this sense, Dave, that you draft a quarterback and then you develop him and then you win with him.
Yep.
But now we've seen Brady acquired and you win a Super Bowl. Peyton Manning acquired by Denver, win a Super Bowl. Jimmy Garoppolo acquired, get to a Super Bowl. Tannehill acquired, good playoff run. Kirk Cousins acquired, yep, win a bunch of games. In today's NFL, Dave, if you could acquire or draft, it feels like we're getting into a spot now where it's becoming more transactional, Dave, and teams don't want to sit around and develop a lot of players.
Money. Look at the Jared Goffs. Look at the Carson Wentz. You're taking these young players in a year or two. They've given them a bunch of money, and the guys have disappointed you. So everyone's looking for the finished product or someone with maybe some upside that's cheap. Mitch Trubisky. Your guy, Mitch Trubisky. I can't wait to see where the Bears end up signing and see if the guy can play better than Mitch can. I mean, Mitch Trubisky is Ryan Tannehill, but he's better than Tannehill was then. So he's going to end up on his feet and get a chance. To go back to the main point is that no one wants to, in my opinion, no one wants to get burned and take this money away from the owner and take it away from your cap numbers and the kid be unsuccessful. Everyone's looking for the guy that has proven it already. And I'm just surprised that some of these guys are available. I mean, back in the day, there was no movement. If I could have got a quarterback, I would have. I mean, God, I might still be coaching.
I'm not joking. You'd be in Miami still.
I'd be in Miami still.
Yeah. All right. You look healthy and happy down there. Are you going to golf today or anything?
No, I played yesterday. You know where my good friend Tony Wise is down here, and we're going over to see Jimmy tomorrow. I'm driving over to the Keys. My wife and I got to say hello to Joy. Last time I did your show, I did not mention Joy, and when I hung up, my wife screamed at me, "You talk to Colin all week. Say hello to Joy." So I'm doing that, Joy, from Jan and myself. But no, tomorrow we're going to be over Jimmy's.
Hi, Jan. Hi, Coach.
We'll be over in we'll be in the Keys for a couple of days, having a few Heinekens, probably get on the boat, tell some lies. Going to look forward to having some fun.
I love talking to Coach Dave Wannstedt. Good seeing you, Coach.
See you guys.
He is so connected in the National Football League. He knows everybody. And by the way, he's the last remaining guy that likes Trubisky. he'd been sitting with me on that set on NFL Kickoff for years saying, I could have won a lot of games with Trubisky. And it's funny because you look at Mitch Trubisky's record the last 3 years with Nagy, it's like 25-13. He's won a bunch of games. He just thinks he's more, they don't know how to use him. He said, you can win that way in the NFL. He said, Lamar doesn't throw a great ball. He's winning. You can win with Mitch Trubisky.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Sunday on Fox, the NASCAR Cup Series returns to Daytona as Chase Elliott looks to defend his win at the 14-turn road course. All the action starts Sunday at 3 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Your most life-changing sleep is about what's underneath Casper Mattress. Only at Casper, 86 supportive gel pods. You know, it's funny. I'm sitting here thinking, you know, about this. The Houston Texans could get a bunch of draft picks for Deshaun Watson. And I think the time is hot. He's off a great season. You don't want to trade him, but you could get a ton for it. But the Texans would screw it up anyway because they don't know what they're doing. It's a prime example with the New York Jets, a dysfunctional franchise. And I like Joe Douglas, the new GM, but Robert Saleh is an unproven head coach. So they're going to bail on Sam Darnold. Will the Colts like Sam Darnold? Kyle Shanahan like Sam Darnold? Smart people in the league like Sam Darnold. And the Colts will probably land him, if not Wentz, or the Niners will. Somebody that's good is going to get Sam Darnold because good people like him. You're reading all the stories. And the Jets are going to bail on him, and they're going to bring in a rookie quarterback from the Mountain West Conference in a division with Bill Belichick, best defensive coach in football history, Sean McDermott, great defensive coach for Buffalo, and Brian Flores, the makings of an amazing defensive coach. Translation, Kyle Wilson's going to go 0-6 in division year one and year two. Or you could get that second pick if you're the Jets, and you could get three first-rounders for it, a couple seconds, potentially. And you've already got, because of the Jamal Adams trade, multiple firsts. And you could stick with Sam Darnold, who's been in the league, who now understands the National Football League, and support him with 7, 8, 9 first- and second-round picks the next 2 years. So I look at the Jets, and I think they're gonna eventually screw it up because they're the Jets. And they're going to – if you go look at what the Jets are doing – you know, I understand them moving off Sam Darnold. He hasn't won, and GMs and coaches like their own quarterback. So they're going to move off Sam Darnold. But it's going to be a revolving door of losses because they're going to bring in a rookie quarterback, and he's going to get his butt handed to him by Belichick, Brian Flores, and Sean McDermott. Defensive coaches that are elite in this league eat rookies for lunch for 2 years. They eat them for lunch, and Kyle Wilson's going to have to come in and start Zach Wilson. And you don't even know if Robert Saleh can coach. You have no idea. So he's going into now the best coached division in the NFL in terms of defense. McDermott, Flores, and Belichick with a rookie quarterback. Or you can stay with Darnold and get multiple first rounders, your own from the Jamal Adams trade and from that, moving your number two pick. And just give him an all-star. You could solve every issue by the second round this year. You really could. If you trade that pick and get a first and a second, you'd have three firsts. You'd have multiple seconds. You'd have, I think they have three thirds. You'd solve all your problems by the third round. You wouldn't even have to hit on all your picks. You could hit on about four of them. Get a corner, get a pass rusher, get a wide receiver, and one more offensive lineman. Four of your six picks you're solved, and you have cap money. Give Sam some players. But, I mean, you know, you give these teams all these picks, and you, like Houston, you're going to get a boatload of picks. They'll screw it up. So if the Jets move off Darnold and get, oh, my God, you got this quarterback, and you still got to be able to make it work. And I the idea that I'm going to have a rookie quarterback in New York in that division against those coaches, Buffalo's a great football team. Belichick somehow last year won 7 games, and Miami's really close. Really close to being an excellent team. They're in the rebuilding process. They're one draft away. And you're going to bring in a kid from the Mountain West Conference. God, good luck with that. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News. Sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
Well, Tom Brady made a huge shift in his career last season, joining a new team in a new city. And his trainer, Alex Guerrero, explained some of the ways that Brady adjusted his workout and health regimen to fit in his new life. He said this was an unprecedented year, not to mention a new city. This year, we included pool workouts and, of course, even a park eviction. He worked on a number of things to prevent overload to his elbows and shoulders and maintaining mobility and strength through his hips and spine. But the constant through it all was the hard work and determination that propelled Tom personally. Guerrero also said that Brady has become more flexible with his diet and found more balance with his food. Instead, we believe in variety. If he wants pizza, he'll eat it. He just wants it to be a really good slice, and he doesn't do that often. We talk about Tom Brady's like DP12 method and everything that he puts to his body, and similar to LeBron, you know, spending a lot of money investing in his body in the off season and having a trainer and traveling with his trainer and the nutrition. And we kind of gloss over that. But when you really listen to what he's saying and think about how much extra work that is, there's a reason why LeBron and Tom Brady have the bodies that they do. Now, obviously, some of it is luck, but it's not all luck. Like, it's hard for us as regular people who are like, you know, I want to get in shape. Like, I'm going to eat healthy just during the week. And then, you know, you walk past the cupboard and there's some chips in there and you just maybe have a few. Like, it takes a lot of discipline to daily give up things that make you happy in order to achieve an ultimate goal. Like, it's a lot of extra work.
Yeah, I think I'm reasonably disciplined. But if you give me chicken nachos at any point in the day, I'm going to worry about the repercussions later. I'm not gonna lie to you. I don't care about the repercussions.
Right. And Tom Brady doesn't do that. It's really, you don't give him enough credit, LeBron too, and just how much effort they put into the nutrition training. So the Bucks dropped their fourth game in a row last 24-113 loss to the Raptors. Giannis had 10 rebounds and 8 assists, but his last point came with 6 minutes left in the game. However, he doesn't think it's time to worry about the team just yet. He said, I kind of have a feeling everybody is in panic mode, which should not be the case. You've got to look at the bright side of it. You still have another opportunity on Thursday, so getting better, watch the film, improve, keep everybody in good place. It's not the end of the world right now. This is kind of my issue with the Bucks last season. Not that Giannis didn't have an MVP season, but it just, Bucks are kind of getting into the space where, like, I've heard enough about how great you guys are, and have all these exciting pieces. I need to see some results. They're 0-9 and trailing after a 3-0 worst record in the NBA this season, trailing after the quarter. They were outscored 12-4 in the final 5 minutes of the Raptors. And if you just look at the last three seasons, the way that the Bucks have finished it, 2018 lost the first round to the Celtics in 7. 2019 lost in the Eastern Conference Finals to the Raptors in 6. And last year they lost in 5 to the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. Where are the results?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fair question. I'm going to ask Antoine Walker that in 10 minutes. Totally fair question.
So Draymond Green spoke about this week about the double standard he sees between how players are treated when they ask for a trade and how teams treat them while they're looking for a trade. And LeBron joined the conversation last night, and he fully agrees with what Draymond said.
It's the narrative of what the league has always been. And, you know, from a team's perspective, they've controlled the narrative. They've controlled the narrative of how players should be, how they should act, how they should, you know, treat their organization. We just want people to understand that it's two sides of the coin. It's not just one-sided.
I totally understand where Draymond and LeBron are coming from. I'm obviously a very pro-player person. I've seen how these trades work and people getting cut and contracts, and that's why I don't believe in loyalty to organizations. But there's a structure to the sport. There's a structure to the business, and it's agreed upon between players and organizations. It's called a CBA. If you don't want trades anymore, which, let's be honest, don't just benefit organizations. James Harden wanted out to lead the Rockets, so he got a trade to the Nets. We've seen this happen many times where it benefits the players. I don't actually think that fans and media are very lenient with organizations if they do a bad job. Deshaun Watson is in a terrible situation. Nobody's saying Deshaun Watson needs to be rebuilt in Houston. No one's mad at Deshaun Watson. There's plenty of organizations like the Detroit Lions, the way that they treated some of this. Fans are actually taking care of the situation. I think that what Draymond and LeBron are trying to explain, that there's a real personal side to this. Like Blake Griffin sitting, Andre Drummond sitting, it affects you personally to not be able to go out there and play. How can a organization just do crazy players and keep them healthy, not for the trade value? There is a personal side of it. You have kids, you have a family, a family, it's stressful, and fans sometimes get a bit of that.
Yeah. Good stuff. Joy Taylor with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Yeah, by the way, Giannis, I remember watching a 60 Minutes piece about 3 years ago on how great Giannis was. He was the next LeBron, and I just rolled my eyes. He can't shoot. He can handle the ball okay, but he doesn't control the tempo of a game. And I've always said this, most bigs I don't want touching the ball with 4 minutes left because they can't shoot free throws. Giannis is decent at that. But the idea that Giannis is going to take over this league is laughable. He doesn't sell shoes. He's not as marketable. He doesn't control games. You don't want him. If he's behind late, he's useless. Antoine Walker, who played 12 years in this league and was also a champion and also a three-time All-Star, his thoughts on Giannis. It's not that I don't like him. I just think we elevated him to a space he wasn't close to being ready for. That's next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Well, Antoine Walker won a title with the Heat, played 8 years in Boston, 12 years overall. He was a great scorer, an NBA champ, and a first-round pick, and a three-time All-Star, and he lives in one of my favorite cities in America, Chicago. He is now joining us live. All right, we got a couple of things to bat around here. Let's start with this. I said this earlier today in my opening rant. There are talented players, and then there are guys that are talented and valuable. Like Chris Paul is valuable. He leaves, teams get worse. He arrives, everybody gets better. I know nobody likes him, and he's difficult, but he's really valuable. Then there's guys like Giannis. I know he's talented, but Antoine, I'm over it. He's a bad late. He's a bad late game player. They can't come from behind. Like, where do you land right now on Giannis in Milwaukee?
Giannis is a guy, and I agree with you to a certain degree, is that it's tough to coach him because he's a two-time MVP. And I don't want to take anything away from that. He's earned that award, and he's done a great job over the last 4 or 5 years of developing his game. But if he wants to be a champion, he has to get a post-up game. He has to get a mid-range game. I'm not necessarily concerned with the three-point shooting, maybe lessen your value and maybe take only a couple a game. And then the free throw shooting. I mean, he's shooting 64% right now. So that means that he cannot be trusted late in games. I think the Miami Heat put the blueprint out on him, how you're going to be able to guard him. And now teams are taking that in full advantage. If he's not in the open floor, it's very hard for Giannis to score. And he has to figure that out. So everybody's like, oh, the Bucks, he needs to lead the Bucks. He needs to go other places. He needs to do this and do that. They need to add this piece. Unfortunately, their problem was with their own personal superstar. He has to get better. His offensive skill level has to get up if he wants to compete with the Kevin Durants, with the LeBron James of the world, if he wants to be in the championship contention. If not, they will continue to get bounced in the playoffs because of his lack of offensive performance. He has to get better. And I know it's tough, because he's a two-time MVP, and what coach is going to step in and tell him that he has to get better?
Yeah, no. Your point, though, LeBron is always tinkering with his game to get better. Mm-hmm. It looks like Giannis is working on the stuff he wants to work on, but not elevating his game. Now, Speaking of Brooklyn, listen, we all know it's a tremendous offensive team. I still don't think you can play. I think KD and James Harden could win a title if they were better defensively on the other spaces. What do you do with three great offensive players? I mean, I watch them when they play. They're terrible defensively, Antoine.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because they're so talented offensively. This is the first time in NBA history that we're seeing three guys that do not really need each other offensively. All three of these guys can score the basketball, can do amazing things on the offensive end. But when you want to win a championship, Colin, you got to make sacrifices. When I played for the Miami Heat, I was in the prime of my career. When I came in, Pat Riley told me I need to make a sacrifice. I couldn't be a 20-10 guy no more. I had to do other things on the floor. The team was built around Shaq and D-Wade. These guys, somebody is going to have to make a commitment on the defensive end. I think Kevin Durant is very capable of doing that. We've seen him be a very good two-way player. James Harden has the body and the strength to be a good player. We see him make some defensive plays from time to time. But that's the question mark is Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving's never made a commitment to the defensive end, and he hurts you because the point guard is the toughest position in the NBA. Every night you're going against tough point guards. So I don't know if they have that. And they don't have the necessary role players besides DeAndre Jordan, who's kind of had a defensive, you know, mentality on that team. So they're going to struggle at times, but I don't know if teams can get to 130. You know, I don't know how many NBA teams in a 7-game series can get to 130 And then you got moments like last night where any one of those guys can get you 40, and that's very difficult to beat.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. This past week, I was home, and I was watching Boston lose to Washington, and the internet exploded, and people were banging on Brad Stevens. And my takeaway was watching that game. Have we overvalued the Celtics' talent? Now, I like Jason Tatum. I think he's really a spectacular talent. But I look at the rest of that team, and I think it's a lot of guys. And I think to myself, nothing against Danny Ainge, but I don't see a lot of difference-maker players. Are the Celtics just a good team because they just have mostly good players?
They are a good team. I don't believe they're a championship team, especially now in the Eastern Conference where you got James Harden that's added to the Brooklyn Nets, and that's going to be very difficult for the next couple of years to get past them. But you got to start from the top. I think Kemba Walker is not the same guy because of injury. I think they're downplaying his knee. He hasn't really recovered. You saw that in the bubble when he tried to come back. And even this season, he's not the same guy. I think it's something really wrong with his knee. I do like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum long-term to be your two wings. They seem like they work very well together. Where they dropped the ball a little bit is that they didn't get nothing for Gordon Hayward.
Yeah.
I think if Gordon was going to go somewhere, you should have been able to get some type of big. I think you got a Dwight Howard that was out there. So you had to get a serviceable big that's going to be defensive-minded for them. Now, granted, Marcus Smart is not playing right now, probably the heart and soul of this team, the one guy who can, you know, guard four positions, and, you know, he's the leader vocally on this team. So when he comes back, they'll be a little bit better. But when you talk about – I don't think they're better than Philly. I don't believe they're – actually, I don't think they're better than the Milwaukee Bucks, even with the way Giannis is playing. And I know they're not better than Brooklyn. So they're still a ways away from getting over that. And be honest with you, Kyle, I don't know if Brad Stevens is the coach. I mean, he's honestly done a terrific job. He's won a ton of games, but he hasn't got over that hump either.
Yeah.
You got to put that out there too. Sometimes, you know, we blame the player. Sometimes you got to look at the total situation there. So they're gonna continue to win games because they got two all-star wings. But what are you talking about getting to the championship level? I don't think they're there yet.
I only got 2 minutes left, Anton, but I want to ask you this. Mm-hmm. Anthony Davis, forget the injury, was not having a very good year for him offensively, and we were expecting more. Is it fair to say that he's a talented guy, but he's never a one? He's just the best two in NBA history. He doesn't have a one mentality. This was going to be the year, and he's played poorly offensively. Maybe that's just who he is.
No, I think the 71 days, the shortened season, he didn't understand it. Probably partied a little bit too long. Didn't come in probably the best shape possible. When we first saw him go to the Lakers, he was spending a lot of time with LeBron. You saw a lot of videos, a lot of Instagrams of them being in the weight room together. And I'm not saying I don't have insight to say that they're not doing that. But I felt like that just watching him, that he was not the same guy that we saw finish off in the bubble last year and play great in the playoffs. And to be great and to be one of the elite players in this league, every year, you got to add a little something. You got to continue to get better. That's why the Kevin Durants, the Steph Currys, the LeBron James, the James Harden, those guys do it for 5, 6, 7, 8 years at a time because they continue to add things to their game. And right now, we're not seeing that. But also, you got to remember this, too, about Anthony Davis. He's always been injury prone. Always. And I think that's the reason why he signed a 5-year deal, because he knows – he gets hurt a lot.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to put a 2-year deal or a 3-year deal on his body. So his pain tolerance is probably not very high. So LeBron James done a good job last year of keeping them focused on playing and not missing a lot of games, but they're going to miss him. And then you're going to have to wait till he gets back into basketball shape to make a real run. So him being out really hurts the Lakers as far as longer term, because you got to get him right if LeBron wants to win another title.
Yeah, great stuff today, Antoine. 12 years in the NBA, a 3-time All-Star. I'm not sure if I've had you on before, but you make a lot of really interesting points. Mm-hmm. And a Chicago guy living in the city.
Yes, sir.
Hopefully they'll – I think they've opened up restaurants a little bit in Chicago. Once this cold spell is gone, you can go out and go to Chicago, cut and steak 48 and live it up a little.
I know. You come to Chicago, look me up now. Look me up. I'm right here.
I will. I promise I will. Great talking to you, man. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks for having me on the show.
You bet. If you've never been to Chicago, what a great American city. Ryan, have you been there? Oh, my God, it's good.
I have been for the NFL draft a few years ago. Great city.
Oh, it's a great city. Great food city. Great people city. All the cool Midwestern people just, they all go to Chicago. Great party city. Now, winters are a little rough. You want to stay away? Yeah, a little. Christmas to about March, there are other cities. Cremo Barber Grade products designed to soothe and relieve that beard itch. I use it every morning. They tame, moisturize, and style your beard with creams, oils, and softness. Available at Amazon and CremoCompany.com. It's spelled C-R-E-M-O. I love their stuff. CremoCompany.com. Bruce Arians around the corner.